In Ephesians chapter 4, we read these words in verse 25, "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbors, for we are members one of another." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
All of Ephesians, of course, is the word of the Lord, as is the entire Bible. But the book of Ephesians is noted for how compacted it is. 6 chapters, and yet there is so much in here that we've already been in Woodlands. We've already been in Ephesians for the better part of a year, and we're just barely into the second half. In the first half, we're dealing with doctrinal issues. The second half, still doctrine, but at the same time, more practical application of doctrine. And here in this verse, we see a verse that focuses upon setting aside lying and speaking the truth. I guess we all know that lying is wrong. We learned that in early childhood. But also in early childhood, we learned that lying is very common. There is a study that appeared in the National Geographic back in June of 2017. It was titled, "Why People Lie." It said the average person tells about 1 to 2 lies each day, but those are lies that they recognize and remember. There are probably some that we say half-consciously that we don't even think about. Further, that children learn between ages 2 and 4 that they can lie, but they aren't very good at it. Usually it's pretty easy to catch them up. I remember one time when David was, I don't know how old, but a little toddler. And anyway, Marlene had asked him about something that he had done wrong, and he said, "A baby did it." But between ages 5 and 7, usually they become more skillful. Develop their skills and lie more effectively and more believably. Interestingly enough, when we sort through age groups, it's ages 13 through 17 that people lie the most. Next most common age group for lying is 9 to 12, and then 18 to 24, from there on, or 18 to 44, I should say, then it starts to go down. People ages 45 to 59 lie less frequently, and 60 to 77, much less frequently. And now I'm 78, they didn't even measure after that, so I guess they figure the people 78 and older don't lie at all. But why people lie? Well, 22% of the time, it's to cover up a mistake. About 30% of the time, it's to gain some kind of economic or personal advantage over somebody else. 8% of the time, it's to give people a better opinion of ourselves. Something I always enjoy about Veterans Day. You know, Veterans Day here, we always have this gathering there at the Golden Corral in Montgomery. You sit down there, and you get people from all different branches of service, all the races, and all ages, and so on. You're all sitting around the table, and each of us lying about his military career. But anyway, it's fun. But anyway, there I was, surrounded by 100 Russian pigs, and I really was shot 2,097 of them. I had to flee after that sort of thing. But anyway, sometimes people lie out of humor, and I question whether that is lying. By the way, you know why it is that you never see elephants hiding in trees? It's because they do it so well. But 5% is to help other people or avoid hurting other people. National Geographic suggests that lying is culturally programmed into our character and may be part of our genetic makeup. Doesn't mention that, according to Jeremiah, the cause is the human heart. Jeremiah says the heart is deceitful and wicked above all things. Who can know it? And also the source of all lies, the father of all lies, is Satan himself, as Jesus tells us in John 8:44. Question we ask then is, why do people lie? told who lies and what their reasons are, but I should say, why is lying wrong? What's wrong with lying? Some people think, oh, it's just a little minor character flaw. It doesn't really matter that much to July. Probably shouldn't do it, but actually it's a big deal. First of all, lying is wrong because it is contrary to the character of God. In John 11, verse 25, we read where Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Jesus didn't just say, I am, or I will show you the truth. Jesus said, I am the truth. Truth is a central part of the character of Jesus, and therefore of God himself. And his opposite, Satan, in John 8:44, we read that Satan is the father of lies. So lying is wrong, first of all, because it is contrary to the character of God and consistent with the character of Satan. Second, lying is wrong because civilization, all rational discourse, is based upon the assumption that people tell the truth. If you can't assume that most people tell the truth most of the time, how can you even have a rational conversation? Why bother asking somebody directions if you assume they're going to just as likely lie as tell the truth? I was going to say, why watch anything on the news media? Well, that's another question entirely, whether we can get into that further. Why bother asking somebody what time it is if you assume they're just as likely to lie as tell the truth? By the way, in downtown Montgomery, a lot of times when people ask what time it is, they don't really mean what time it is. What they mean is how expensive a watch are you wearing? And sometimes the best thing to say is about 3 o'clock. But anyway, the point is, unless we assume that most people are going to tell the truth most of the time, there's no point in even having conversation. Civilization is based on the assumption that people commonly tell the truth. A third is that lying deceives. And lying as it deceives, it harms people. If you go to the doctor and the doctor lies about your medical diagnosis, it could cost you your life, because you rely on what your doctor says. If you go to your mechanic and he diagnoses what's wrong with your car, and he's lied about it, it could cause you a breakdown or an accident. A fourth reason is that lying is harmful in the sense that it is habit forming. You tell a lie, you have to tell another and probably a bigger lie to cover up for the first, and more like that, lying becomes a habit. Fifth point is that lying hurts your credibility. When I was in Sioux City, practicing law, waiting for the Air Force to take me on active duty, there was a lawyer there. He wasn't a particularly godly man necessarily, but he had a reputation as a very fine defense attorney, but also he had a reputation that his word was his bond. And if he made a promise, you didn't need to get it in writing. He was going to keep it. In fact, even the courts, if he had requested a delay or something like that, they wouldn't ask him to submit reasons. They know that if he told them over the phone that this was true, they could rely on that. Credibility is something you gain from telling the truth, something you lose by lying. We all know the classic story of the little boy who started sheep and cried wolf and thought that was fun to get everybody out there rushing when there was no wolf. That was a great joke. But then when there really was a wolf and he starts calling wolf, nobody pays any attention. He's just playing his tricks again. You lose credibility. Another reason is that we lose the ability to even determine truth. The more you lie, the more telling the truth consists of telling the same lie consistently. And we lose track of even the ability to distinguish truth. But a final reason, a reason that Paul gives here, is that it is especially wrong to deceive those who are close to us, those who are members one of another, those who are our neighbors. In fact, I think we can say that lying is such a serious matter that God prohibits it as part of the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20:16, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And yet, well, that's part of the Ten Commandments, and we're given those Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus. They really go all the way back to creation. In fact, in one of my books, Historical and Theological Foundation of Law, I have a chapter titled Justice in Genesis. And in that chapter, I demonstrate that every one of the Ten Commandments of Exodus is found in at least some form way back in the book of Genesis. One example in Genesis is when in chapter 12 we see Abram and Sarai, as they were first named and their names were changed, they go to Egypt. And there in Egypt, they're going to meet with the Pharaoh there. And Abram is concerned that Sarah is a very beautiful woman, and you understand this. Sarah is now 76, and it's about 76 when you really start to become beautiful, right, Marlene? Sarah is a beautiful woman. He's concerned that Pharaoh is going to have him slain and take Sarah to be his wife, and so he says, let's lie. And it's not a complete lie. It's kind of a half-truth. Tell him you're my sister, and she was his half-sister. But it's an intentional deception. He is leading Pharaoh to believe that she is not his wife, when in fact she is. And the interesting thing about all this is that Pharaoh has a much greater sense of honor here than Abram does. Pharaoh is a pagan. He's a worshiper of the sun god. In fact, he even is considered to be an incarnation of the sun god. The sun god's name is Ra. Pharao means descended from the sun. When he learns the truth that Sarah is in fact Abram's wife, he calls Abram, verse 18 of chapter 12, and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidst thou, she is my sister? I might have taken her to me for wife. Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. Point is, Pharaoh, based upon the law of God written on men's hearts that we read about in Romans 1, the natural law or conscience, he had a better sense of right and wrong based on natural law than Abram did as God's chosen person. And Abram even makes the same mistake a little bit later when he is dealing with Abimelech in chapter 20. Well, anyway, we've seen the reasons that lying is wrong. It is contrary to God's law, contrary to his natural law as well as his revealed law. But what is lying? What do we mean by lying? Lying is not simply saying something that is factually inaccurate. Lying is intentional deception. I'm going to intentionally deceive you right now. I'm going to tell you something that is 100% factually correct, but it gives you a wrong impression of what actually happened. Some years ago, I was stabbed in the chest by a masked man right in the middle of the day in Montgomery, Alabama. This masked man had a female accomplice. He stabbed me in the chest, demanded money, and I paid him. That is true. Everything that I just said is factually correct. But I didn't press charges because I've just given you a very distorted picture of what actually happened. Actually, he was a surgeon and he was removing a basal cell from my chest. But what I just said was true. He was a masked man wearing a surgical mask. It was downtown in Montgomery, broad daylight. He had a female accomplice, his nurse. He stabbed me with a scalpel, a knife, and then he demanded money, sent me a bill, which my insurance company paid. Everything I said was factually correct, but it gave you a totally distorted picture of what actually happened. In other words, a lie can be much more than just simply statements that are factually wrong. A lie is an intentional deception. You can lie non-verbally. You can lie by nodding your head or shaking your head or rolling your eyes, indicating that's stupid when in fact it isn't. You can lie in a negative and give a distorted impression. Another form of what I call lying is saying things without checking them out. That is representing that you know what you're talking about when you don't. You know, there's a debate about whether our founding fathers in this country were Christian. The vast majority of them were, and there is plenty of good documentation, statements that they made to establish, but there's a quote that many people are using here. Quote this: turns out there's no way of proving this is accurate. Patrick Henry is sometimes quoted as saying, "It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians. Not on religion, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ." Problem is, Patrick Henry never said that. Now, we don't need that statement. There are plenty of authentic statements demonstrating the Christian beliefs of our founding fathers. We don't need to lead you statements like this. And somebody might say, "Well, I didn't know it was false." No, but you made that statement as though you knew what you were talking about, but in fact you did not. Saying something without checking out whether it is true is a deception. And sometimes the most effective deception is a statement that is half true, because people catch up on the part that is true, and so they assume the rest of it is true as well. Another thing that is closely related to lying is breaking promises. When you make a promise, you imply that you are going to keep it. And so not keeping that promise is, in a sense, deception, and is, in a sense, lying, even though maybe when you made the promise, you intended to keep it. Is procrastinating it, promise you'll do something tomorrow and then putting it off, is that lying? Sometimes it becomes unavoidable, but if you do that regularly, knowing that you may not keep your promise, that becomes lying. Are there exceptions, then, in which lying is justified? Well, you may kick me out of the pulpit for saying this, but I'm going to say, yes, there are certain circumstances. One is time of war. Churchill once said that in wartime, truth is so precious that it should always be guarded by a bodyguard of lies. Give you an example. Right there in World War II, when we were planning the invasion of D-Day, the Allies took the body of a homeless drifter and dressed him, cleaned him up and dressed him in the uniform of a British officer. And then they planted orders in his pocket. Orders as to what was going to happen in the D-Day attack, how we were going to conduct the invasion. Orders that were totally false and totally deceptive. The Germans found that body, they found the order, oh, now we know the Allies' plan, which was not their plan at all, and so their response was totally off guard. That was deception. But I think it was justified. Espionage. Anybody who's engaged in espionage is pretending he's somebody that he is not. That's deception. And yet I'd say it's justified. Look at athletics. In athletics, when you're playing football and you fall back for a pass like this, you fake a pass. Then do you say to the quarterback, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that, I deceived you, we weren't going to pass at all"? No, there are some circumstances where it's understood that deception is part of what we do. One example of this comes again in World War II with Corrie ten Boom and her family, a Christian family in the Netherlands. And this family was hiding Jews from the Nazis. And what they would do is whenever they knew Nazis were in the area, the Jews would go down to a trap door into the basement. And they had a carpet over the trap door, and the trap door then was under the kitchen table. Well, Nazis came to the door. Corey, and I think it was Corey's older sister, actually, but Corey was alone at the time. And they came to the door and asked, are there any Jews in the house? And she said, I cannot tell a lie. There are Jews in the house. They're down in the basement. No, she didn't. No, she didn't do that at all. Here's what she did. She said, she pretended like she was either retarded or crazy. And she pointed under the table. That's where the trap door was, under the carpet. They're under the table. And the Nazis assumed that she was a half-wit, and there were no Jews there, and so they left. Now, some will try to say that she didn't really lie, because, in fact, they were in the basement, under the trap door, which is under the carpet, which is under the table, so it wasn't technically a lie, but it was a deception. She deceived them into thinking that she was a half-wit, and there were no Jews in the house. Rather than trying to say it wasn't a lie, which is quite a stretch, I think it's better to simply say, yes, she lied, and she was justified under those circumstances in doing so. There's one example of this that we see in Exodus chapter 1, where the Pharaoh has commanded the Hebrew midwives to slay the male Hebrew children. But we read that the midwives feared God and did not as the Pharaoh commanded them, but saved the men's children alive. And then when the Pharaoh called the men to ask, why are you saving the men's children alive? She said, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They're lively, they're quick, and they give birth before we arrive. That was a lie. Necessary lie, so they could continue saving children. But that was a lie. And it was justified. We read that God dealt well with the midwives and gave them houses. In other words, God approved and rewarded their disobedience. And I think that has to mean rewarded their lying about the disobedience as well. I've been engaged in deception for several decades. And I think it's time I have to confess this to everybody. Several decades ago, we had a couple men come to our house to try to sell us on a security system, ADT. It's a good system, but we didn't buy at the time. We said we'd think about it. And we never did buy it, but anyway, they planted a sign in our front yard by our door that said, this house protected by ADT, and we left the sign there. It was there for years. Now, do I need to place an ad in the Montgomery Advertiser apologizing to burglars for my lie? My deception? No, I don't think so, but the point I'm going to make here is this. I'm not so much concerned with these exceptional cases. I'm concerned with the clear lies, even white lies, lies that we engage in with no justification. We're told here that we are to speak every man truth to his neighbor. Okay, let's see. I'll begin by saying, I don't like your shirt. It's ugly. And you need a different pair of glasses. No, do I need to do it? No, of course not. Not that I think that, but does telling the truth mean we have to say everything we think? Absolutely not. Rotary has a saying that they call the four-way test for truth. Before you say something, first you ask, is it necessary? Or yeah, first, is it true? If it's true, then we ask, is it necessary? Something might be true, but it doesn't have to be said. And I don't have any objection to your shirt at all, or your glasses, by the way, but taking up examples. Is it beneficial to all concerned? And finally, is it kind? Again, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it beneficial to all concerned? And is it kind? You don't have to volunteer your opinion about everything, unless you're a pastor and you have to do it from the pulpit. You don't have to correct everybody's grammar all the time, although sometimes it is appreciated. What do you do when your wife really, really wants a dress, really loves this dress, and shows it to you on eBay or wherever, your Amazon, and says, do you like this? Problem is you don't. What do you say? Well, 53 years of marriage, I still haven't figured that one out yet. People like people, probably, who make insincere compliments for a while. But that starts to become unappreciated. And comments or compliments from such people gradually became taken much less seriously. However, one thing you can do, rather than just making compliments you don't mean, you can develop the skill of looking for things about somebody that you can compliment, and compliment them sincerely. And that is appropriate. But then also, you probably know a few people that you can count on to tell you as it is, even when they know you're not going to like it. Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. It's good to be a person that can tell the truth, tell people what they need to hear, but to tell it in love. As we read back there in verse 15, speaking the truth in love. You can say something that needs to be said, that meets the four-way test, but say it in a loving, kindly way that has to do with when you say it, how you say it, your tone of voice as you say it, everything else about it. And the other side of that is when you have somebody that does that, as a humble person, you should be a teachable. And you should be able to accept such things, and if they, in fact, are accurate, to apply them. Now, another thing I think we need to do, too, is we need to recognize that sometimes people don't mean what they literally say. And you need to listen to people for what they're saying to understand what they really mean. For example, you ask somebody, how are you? And you might hear, I'm fine. That may not mean I'm fine. It may mean I'm hurting, I've got problems, but I can handle them and I don't really want to talk about them right now. Or it might mean I'm not quite ready to talk about them, can you coax me a little bit more? Listen to what people are really saying. One thing more in regard to lying, and that is what we read in Psalm 15, where we think about those things that God approves. There in that passage he says, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? And one of those listed there is, he that sweareth to his own hurt, yet doeth it. In other words, you promise to do something. Turns out that you wish you hadn't made the promise. It is not advantageous. But you go ahead and do it anyway. You agree to do a job. Turns out the job is a lot more difficult than you thought it was. It isn't really worth the amount that you're getting paid for it. But you promise to do it, so you do it anyway. Or you agree to sell something. Let's say you agree to sell a car to somebody for, let's say, $3,000. And then you discover from the blue book that, oh, it's really worth $5,000. I wish I hadn't made that deal. Or maybe somebody else just comes along and offers you a higher price. I wish I hadn't made that deal. But you did. You swore to your own hurt, and you do it anyway. This happens to me occasionally, and probably happens to a lot of people who do a lot of public speaking, is I might agree to speak to a small audience somewhere for a small honorarium, and then an opportunity comes along for the same night to speak to a larger audience for a larger honorarium. Now, I know of a lot of speakers, including, I'm sorry to say, Christian speakers, that will just simply cancel the first one and take the second. I will not do that. I hope I never do. But anyway, swearing to your own hurt and yet doing it. You know, there's also in that keeping promises. There are times when, of course, keeping a promise becomes impossible. And then we try to work out something that give satisfaction to the person that we have to break the promise to. But there are also times when we may make a promise and turns out we shouldn't have made that promise at all. It was the wrong thing to do, not just that it wasn't advantageous, but let's say that I promised a hitman that, okay, for $100,000, I'll go ahead and kill this person for you. And then I happen to tear up the Bible and I read, thou shalt not kill. Oh, that's right, that's wrong. I should never have made that promise. But I made the promise, I gotta keep it, so here we go. No, the promise was wrong from the beginning. Ab initio is the legal term we use for it. No, of course you don't keep a promise like that, one that was wrong from the beginning. We do see a real conflict one time that the Hebrews had with the men of Gibeah, where the men of Gibeah, God told them to wipe out everybody in Canaan. The men of Gibeah came to them, seemed to be pretty nice guys, and said, we'll agree to be your servants if you spare us. And so they made the agreement. Probably shouldn't have made that agreement. But once they made it, they kept it. Was that the right thing to do? Probably. We see people sometimes that are faced with a situation where they have to stand for what is true, even though it could be disadvantageous, could cost them social prestige, could even cost them their jobs. We have school systems right now that are requiring that all students and all other personnel have to address others by their, quote, preferred pronouns, unquote. I have my preferred pronouns, and I'd appreciate it if everybody would use them for me. They are thee, thou, thy, and thine. I'll settle for y'all. But those aren't the pronouns that they seem to be asking for. But I guess everybody has a right to call himself or herself whatever they want. They don't have a right to demand that others use those terms, especially if others believe they're wrong. If you believe as a matter of religious conviction, or just as a matter of science and medical fact, that even though a person may have taken some hormones or even gone through some surgery, that person was born a male and is still a male, you are compromising your integrity and you are lying by using a pronoun that you know connotes something that is wrong. There are times when people have to stand for the truth in that and don't go out of your way to try to offend. But when you are placed on the stand and in a position where you have to say yes or no, you're going to have to say, no, I cannot address you by that pronoun, because that would be a sin against God. God created you a female, and no matter what you have done to change that, you are still a female, and I am not going to lie to you or lie to anybody else by saying that you are something that you are not. Well, we see the importance of telling the truth, but also, in connection with verse 15, telling the truth in love. And we know that we live in a world of deception. Deception is everywhere. It's in the legal profession, the medical profession, it's in the news media, it's everywhere. We should strive to be truthful. We should strive to discern what is true and false among others, but recognizing the web of deception that we are caught in, that should simply do more to turn us to the cross for forgiveness and also for cleansing. As we read in John 8:32, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Before I close the message, there's something that I would like to read for you here. Down at the cross where my Savior died is the hymn we're going to be closing with. But a couple of weeks ago, we lost a very close friend. A very close friend of Marlene. I knew her and her husband, and not as well as Marlene did, but Cynthia Briscoe is her name. She passed away of cancer, like the 30th of January, and had been suffering for well over a year, lung cancer. Fine, fine Christian family. They had the funeral yesterday, and Marlene was able to observe the funeral by live stream. But Marlene wants to tell you about her dear friend Cynthia. She'd asked us in prayer for Cynthia several weeks ago. Cynthia passed away 13 days ago. 1 year and 4 months after her treatments in Houston for lung cancer. Her memorial service was held Saturday morning. This story was replayed at the service. Some time ago, Cynthia had a dream of heaven. in which scores of people dressed in white robes were walking down a mountain. They were walking in two columns, in groups of about five, arm in arm, crisscrossing as they descended the mountain, and they were singing, "Down at the cross where my Savior died, down where for cleansing from sin I cried, there to my heart was the blood applied, glory to his name, glory to his name, glory to his name, there to my heart was the blood applied, glory to his name." Cynthia was impressed by how joyously and enthusiastically these newly arrived believers were singing praises to our Lord. And a few minutes later, she awakened, and she received a phone call from a friend telling her of a news event that had just happened. While Cynthia was having this dream, it was September 11th, 2001. Her husband Bill said, "As of January 30th, Cynthia knows about the accuracy of her vision of heaven." So would you give us that hymn, "Down at the Cross, for my